Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. As always, I'm one of your co-hosts, Paul David.
And I'm your other co-host, Maya Doran Pohornby.
Today, we're talking with Sunghee Park, the founder and CEO of Syncy, talking about how to learn the piano online. And just by way of introduction, Syncy is an online platform that music teachers can use to host music lessons remotely. By way of background, we all know that online teaching surged during the COVID-19 pandemic, but a lot of times music lessons were requiring students and teachers to play in synchronicity, and lags in connection were causing issues on video platforms like Zoom, and it made it nearly impossible for music students to learn remotely. So Sunghee Park was inspired by this challenge, and as an experienced private tutor of piano herself, Sunghee faced these challenges firsthand and decided to build a solution, like all good tech founders.
While it is open for all instrument learners, for pianists, there is a virtual keyboard, meaning students can either hook up their piano to a virtual keyboard in order to see theirs and their teacher's keys light up on the screen. Essentially, it allows for visualization of the music learning experience. With the variety of inbuilt features making this an all-in-one platform for music teachers and students alike, it's no surprise that Syncy won the Aid and Antler startup competition in 2022 and has had investment of over £200,000 by angel investors and Dohi Accelerator. So, welcome to the pod, Sunghee. We've never featured a music-specific edtech company on the pod, so we're excited to learn about the field from you today.
Welcome, welcome.
Hello.
So obviously we had a great meeting at Plexol, where you work out of here east, and you talked to me a bit about how the COVID-19 pandemic accelerated the growth of EdTech and how Syncy evolved as a result. I related to that a lot as someone who founded a company in the middle of the pandemic. So just curious to hear a little bit more of that origin story of your work and where Syncy came from.
So we ended up creating a platform primarily for my own use. During the lockdown, I was fortunate enough to have a neighbor who was a programmer and could build an initial prototype to use with my students. And then some of my students became the first investors, and which is how the project gradually took off. And initially, I didn't thoroughly assess what market needs or the end customers. So I had to learn about these aspects along the way. COVID allowed us to realize that there are ways to conduct music lessons online and connect learners and educators and figure out how to find better methodologies through devices. And there were so many tools for STEM education, but there were not so much for arts, which then, there were only like 4 out of 600 companies out there, among which like one was it's called Soundtrap from Spotify and so on. So it's like, I found the space in music education and music edtech, inside of the edtech, music education was kind of marginalized among different disciplines of studies.
And just following on from that, What feedback from teachers and students have you had?
Our teachers teach different types of musical instruments, which I found initially very surprising, since I intended to design the platform to teach piano theory and music composition. But some of our teachers teach guitar, vocal, and any other different musical disciplines, such as production, sound engineering, etc. And teachers reported that they used Zoom before using Syncy. I also was teaching through Zoom during the initial pandemic, and I didn't even know that Zoom existed. I only knew Skype, that was it. But it became sort of industry standard, so many people knew how to use, but it didn't have functions to conduct online music lessons. Also, teachers found that the multiple cameras function that we have within Syncy helpful, so that they can give more in-depth demonstration on different parts of body movements in relation to the instrument that they teach.
Could you explain that multi-camera setup?
Basically, you can set different webcams. The way that I set it up is the sideways, so I can show my wrist movements as such, or my elbows, so all this upper body movements. But also there's one that I've got overhead, so you can see which I'm striking and how I navigate my fingers around the keys, and also my face stuff. So when I'm explaining, if I show with my facial expression, then they are more engaged. So depending on what I'm teaching, how I'm engaging at a time, I kind of select different cameras and show multiple at the same time.
Obviously, there's the Zoom component of like being on a call with someone, but then to see someone's hands and what they're doing, like that seems like the biggest value add of just like having that second camera. So that's really cool. That sort of made me think, and maybe a good segue about, you know, VR and AR and kind of like a lot of tech companies are heading in this direction to try and create more like engaging, interactive learning experiences. Is that something you all are thinking about, like adding?
So in the future, what I would like to do is to be able to track hands and finger positions to determine the optimal way to use the body in relation to the instruments. So it's similar to, like, there are already apps for, like, let's say golf, how to play, how to have like the optimal posture to for golf, etc. So we often focus on which notes to play and how fast you press the keys to produce the sounds, but without paying enough attention to posture and body weight distribution. And properly engaging the body allows one to relax and play in an optimal manner. So, yeah, that kind of thing. So the issue with this is that this tech can be processed in real time as it needs to be sent the video via cloud and it needs to process. So there's that issue that you need to tackle. And then certain things like with the AI can also, like, in addition to this, like with AI, you could create the perfect learning environment to monitor the student's posture and so on. But music involves a lot of context before you strike the keys, including the physics of the environment and each individual's body composition. So gathering all the necessary data to train the AI, it's a challenging task for now. So that's like a sort of utopia for me. It's like, you know, maybe we could get there at some point when we have, when we can process enough data. But, you know, at the end of the day, music is a form of communication and you could learn how to, up to an extent, but you've got to be able to really connect with someone. And that's, I think, something that AI can help us to build the right level to get to the point where you can export your ideas and communicate. But ultimately, you want to talk with someone and you want to really engage with someone. You want to play the piano for someone and really, you know, resonate that value that you want to give.
I mean, that's exciting to kind of, like, even the posture stuff is really interesting as well. So it'd be cool to learn from, okay, we've got your hands down, but like we need to talk about your body and the environment that you're in and things like that.
One thing that I'm kind of on the fence of yet is the recognition of hand movements for the AI, for example, because it's still like on the development on this to understand the physics of our hands, because we I can't remember like on top of my head, but like something ridiculous, like a fifth of the whole bones, like a number of bones are located in our hands and wrists.
Wow.
So it's quite complex movement that we have in on the hands. And it really, we need to train the AI or to be able to depict these kind of like a subtle differences. But again, like everyone has like a different ways to use their bodies as well. So certain people can tense the body, like, bit differently, like maybe like some people can like make the shoulder go up, so like we need to kind of give the right feedback. Or maybe like a typical thing that happens on the piano is that you raise your fifth finger, then this is like a form of tension. So there are so many things that it gets involved on someone's like body movement that we need to train AI this extensive way that we use our body and track the progress and give the right path to get to the point where you can actually truly relax your body and truly like be able to sync the sound with the body movement.
And I imagine collecting the data to train that AI will provide so many insights for music teachers about how people learn play music ideally.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm constantly learning on like looking at different students' bodies. And kind of you kind of have to think about how can I design a curriculum around this student specifically to be able to get from this to this, and then you have to like assess the their anatomy, but also the right amount of level and practice that you can recommend to that individual. So there are lots of like components in which you have to consider when you are guiding someone.
But why increasingly making the learning environments digital is exciting, because it offers a much quicker way of having that data at your fingertips, so to speak.
Mm-mm. Then you can, you get to see how other people are doing as well. So you can also use it for like different curriculums and approaches.
Brilliant. So I just want to now pivot the conversation a bit towards your company's culture and what you seek in potential employees. So you're an experienced musician yourself, as Paul mentioned in the introduction. You picked up the piano as a child. You then studied music professionally in both Spain and in the UK. So it's no surprise that Sinky describes itself as made by and for music teachers. Could you explain why it's so important to you that the company's workforce have experience in music education?
The wonderful thing about the way that we could build this company was to be able to interact with music teachers around the globe. And for me, it was a journey to find music teachers with similar issues in terms of conducting music lessons, either online or offline. And I've learned a lot about how other teachers engage with their students, both before and after Sinky. And these insights have been very valuable in continuing to build a product, as well as pitching to other teachers who never experienced how to use Sinky.
In terms of it being rooted in your own experience during COVID, could you explain that story for our listeners a bit more?
For me, the thing that I missed most was to be able to feel as if we are in the same room. And therefore, I wanted to be able to play together with my students. That was the first thing that kind of stems out. I was playing a video game. It's called StarCraft. And I was like, if I can play with someone in Poland, like in real time, why can't I do this like using the MIDI keys? Because at the end of the day, it's the same amount of information that you send here and there. And then that's how it stemmed everything. And for me, it was a big joy when the first prototype came out, and then I get to see what they are playing, but also like they get to see what I'm playing, and it sort of made a whole gamified experience from there. So the first thing that I tried was like to sight read the score together. So I would play the left hand for my students, and so that right hand can be played with my students. And then I'd started to add like functions like, we could actually display how hard I hit each notes. So then like each note became like a volume as well, so they can see like how I use certain fingers a bit more with intensity. And because like some, like if you are just starting to learn piano, you can't hear that. So we can bring this synesthetic experience of to visualize the sound. So for me, it was like wonderful thing to be able to witness that initially. And my students did appreciate that. I was like, maybe like it can be spread to the wider population to like feel this joy that we are feeling. Mm-hmm. And that's how I found like a more helpful than Zoom, just having that feature initially. And then I was like, I want to show more angles. I want to show sometimes my pedal, how I use it. And for me, it's like really important how you use wrist. For me, it's like 70% of piano playing comes from the wrist rather than fingers. But we always like focus in here, like on the fingers. So there's this thing called inattentional blindness, which is like called, I'm not sure if you have seen this study on, is that there's this...
Is this the gorilla thing?
Yeah, gorilla experiment. Yeah. So it's a psychological study that demonstrates that when you are focused in a particular task or object, you fail to notice other things. So if you're in the same room with the teacher, you end up always like wanting to see what they are playing, but you don't get to see like how you're bringing that, like with using the whole body. The good thing about when I conduct lessons with Sinky is that you get to just show what you want them to see in that frame of pixels. So it's like, focus here now. Just look at my wrist. Look at how I'm doing it here. So then So they would, it's all about mimicking what teacher does. And as a teacher's job is, try to portray as best you can how you're doing it, how you're using your body, and try to like mimic me first, and then you need to give that room of, but now that once you can do that, explore what else you can do, and then develop your own ways to deliver this, So I think it's just it gives me that multiple ways to show my body, to be more engaged, but at the same time, better guidance to focus exactly what it needs to be focused at a given time. So that's like the multiple angle thing that I, the value of that multiple angle.
It strikes me as very similar to sports psychology in the way that people learn tennis or something like that.
That's the whole point, I think, is learning musical instruments because you need to learn the theory. But it's kind of language plus sports. You need to kind of delve into like a little different ways to look at the same thing. And I wanted to make a tool that you can organize them such a way that you can explore those parts so that you can have a bit more wider view of what it really means rather than play this note, play this note. It's like, it's just like, I think it's kind of ancient pedagogy way of learning music. I think we have so many tools, so many methodologies that, you know, it can be more wholesome, more like holistic way of approaching music.
Learning. Yeah, and it's like revisiting traditional ways of teaching that maybe in recent times we've sort of distanced from, but revisiting them with all these sort of tools that can sort of revolutionize the way that the methods are implemented.
Mm-hmm. I mean, even like Beethoven hated metronome initially. And then, because that was like the latest tech back in his times, right? Yeah. And it's like, tick, tack, I don't like it. But later on in his life, he started to compose music with it. Mm-hmm. And he really valued the tech at the time. So always like that initial reaction of looking at tech is like, ooh, there's that kind of fear a little bit, isn't it? So, but then once you embrace it and then once you know how to use it in a positive way, then, you know, that's what the tools are there for us.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I mean, I think what struck me the most when I first talked to you about Sinky was like just the opportunity to like bridge like online and offline worlds. And like, you know, obviously you talked about the value of someone being in person and being able to see their student and adjust their posture and like, you know, fix their hands and stuff like that. And you're kind of allowing that to happen in a, you know, remote sort of digital context. I think that's really powerful. But also these ways of kind of reintroducing old styles of teaching into, you know, like you talked about democratizing access to music education. And for a lot of folks who maybe they don't live in a place near other teachers or near great teachers, but they can access great teachers through your platform. I think that's a huge aspect that's you know, hopefully you're seeing that democratization is happening and students who maybe didn't have access before can get it.
So moving on to some quick fire questions for you. If you could found another tech startup, what would it be and why?
So right now I'm writing a book for young children between 4 to 7. So my idea is to make it more playful rather than like using the five lines, the typical things, but more of like, oh, okay, so here is the wrist, here is the fingers, but also using tech like such as the AR to be able to make it even more engaging than just books and stickers. So you can be in and out doing different little activities and then they can connect the dots together and then understand, ah, this is this. And etc.
So kind of like an AR tool, tech tool for learning.
Yeah, that's so. Cool. As well as the book. So it's more like we have all this. Like we have books, we have devices. So why not to mix all of that together rather than just like relying just apps or just books? And you can merge this together. So that's my idea at the moment.
I like how committed you are to EdTech. Okay, another quick fire question for you: what tech invention makes you the most excited right now?
AI. AI, but...
And what makes you the most scared?
So every tech has its pros and cons. For me, what I fear most about tech's advancement is for those one who have access to moderate to tech that can set boundaries to shift its usage. So those in position to be didactic of its usage. And we need to be aware of their morals and priorities so we can all discuss about this together.
Absolutely. So sort of issues of transparency around tech.
Yeah.
Who's a little human that's been integral to your career journey?
I'm so fortunate to be able to like have so many admirable teachers and coaches and mentors in my life. And the common denominator that I can see from them is that their passion for what they do. And they taught me how to infuse passion into everything I do in any given moment.
As someone who runs a company and hires people, like, that really resonates with me. I have to give Maya some credit. Like, Maya reached out as like a fan of the pod and was like, I'm super passionate about tech journalism and podcasting. And I was like, cool. Everything else we can learn. You know what I mean? Like, so just come on board and we'll figure it out, because I could feel and like see that passion from Maya. So, but I feel that in like other hiring processes as well. Like you said, you know, your other tech product would be more ed tech, you know, so you're just super passionate about ed tech. Like, that's awesome, you know. But yeah, I think it's unfortunate because there's so many folks out there who are just kind of like drifting through life, like, not, they haven't found their passion. God bless them, they'll find it. But like, to find someone who's like super passionate about something, all the rest falls in place, I feel like. So that's a good one. What's an inspirational quote that stuck with you during your journey in tech?
I was looking for like some quote by Ray Kurzweil. Death gives meaning to our lives. It gives importance and value to time. Time would become meaningless if there were too much of it.
Yeah.
And what I believe is that, you know, just as painters, they use canvas to express their emotions. Mm. Musicians use time as the canvas. So the beauty of music education for me is in teaching how to imagine and design the immediate space in time in the future, and then to be present into the moment to execute, and then also evaluate past actions for self-improvement. So we have to use this time in future, present, and past. That's, for me, the music education. And that's what we learn through music, I think. That's how I see it.
That's a fantastic answer.
I feel like that's an inspirational quote for us.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I was just chatting with a friend the other weekend, one of those chats, like, in someone's living room early morning, you know, one of those. And we were talking about death, and, like, he revealed to me that he's incredibly afraid of death. And, like, as many people are, it's, you know, but this idea that, like, it's, we all know this is coming. And so we better damn well make the most of our time and sort of commit ourselves to, just what we can do to give our lives meaning. You know, I think that's really powerful. So. Cool. Well, that's maybe a great place to end on a cheery note of death. Sunghee Park, I just want to appreciate you for jumping on to the pod today. Can you let our listeners know where they can find out more about Sinky and the great work that you're doing?
So yeah, it's sinky.com.
how do you spell that?
S-Y-N-K-I-I. It's basically, so initially, like, to find the name, we were like, I had like a few candidates, and then it was like, oh, we are syncing the keys.
Totally.
So sync key, but then I wanted to make a bit fancy. So it's like S-Y-N-K and then double I made a bit fun. So that's why.
Absolutely.
It became like really hard to spell though.
It works.
I think it's quite cute.
It works. I mean, as a marketing and branding agency, we're very big fans of people naming themselves well and, you know, doing it in a way that honors their audience. So I think you did that. So. Good job. Good job. Well, yeah, thanks for joining us today, Sunghee. This is an awesome conversation about, you know, how to learn music online and music education. Ed tech kind of meets that intersection. You've obviously developed an incredible tool, so we're really grateful for that. Please, everybody, if you're listening, if you could give us a review. I think we're up to like 21 reviews or something like that on Spotify. Let's make it 25. Please engage with us on social media at Tech Can Save Us, Literal Humans. And we'll hope to get more great guests like Sunghee Park on the show. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.